Attention, you are now entering the debarkation area. No talking, no smoking. Follow the orange line to the processing area. The next scheduled departure to the prison is in 2 hours. You now have the option to terminate and be cremated on the premises. If you elect this option, notify the duty sergeant in your processing area.
We ordinary Americans are being led step by step down the road to a dictatorship, more evil and all-pervasive than that of the late Adolf Hitler and the Nazi party of the German aristocracy. Sherman H. Skolnick. After 60 years of inattention and even denial by the U.S. media, recently uncovered government documents in the National Archives and Library of Congress reveal that President George W. Prescott Bush, the grandfather of President George W. Bush, served as a business partner of and U.S. banking operative for the financial architect of the Nazi war machine from 1926 until 1942, when Congress took aggressive action against Bush and his enemy, national partners. Before all hell broke loose in our country, we never thought that the New World Order and the conspiracy to overthrow America were real. I remember laughing at all the conspiracy nuts that used to tell all kinds of scary stories. They said that George Bush was a Nazi from hell, and that somewhere in Germany there was a monument that said never again. But the madman that was described in the monument was nothing compared to the Bush family. I never expected the Illuminati to raise their heads on the net either. These folks weren't so bad. After all, the new Illuminati constitution seemed to be better than the old one. Thousands rose up against the new constitution, and all the networks made an open joke out of them. What a bunch of anti-New World Order jerks. Their stories would never hold any weight. After all, the Republican/Democratic Party was in charge. Hell, my buddies and me were happy drinking beers, reading the latest NRA magazines, and carrying on like nobody in the world would mess with the gun crowd. I remember just a couple of years ago that the attempt to dump mental screening of all adults by the order of George Bush failed, and that someone named Ron Paul was taken away in chains. We never heard from him again. I guess nobody cared. Today might seem to be a day like any other day, but all across this nation, our public schools are reaping what our government was so carefully sown. They knew what they were doing. They dumbed us all down from the beginning. Even the 501c3 churches gave their blessing to this new party. I remember this website I used to go to called the Federal Observer. Jeffrey Bennett said I could not see past the sights on my gun. And this angered me, and I left numerous comments accusing Jeff and Louie of being non-patriotic. I guess they were right, in an eerie kind of way. I am a socialist idiot, just like Louie said. Oh God, how they were right! Another site I remember well was Wing TV. I tried arguing with them, but I learned a hard lesson. Our government was directly involved with 911. I wish more people would have tuned in and learned the truth about 911 before the New World Order took over and shut them down. Never argue with Wing TV. Never argue with the Federal Observer. And now I sit here in this camp, dumbfounded. Who would think that our government would send young children with the local police to confiscate our guns? We couldn't shoot children, after all. It's the most evil trick I'd ever seen. Gee, they say that prisoners leave in a delicate gray smoke through the crematorium chimney, and that patriot folk from other counties and countries whose transports are unloaded from the ramp every day float out in a black smoke. A group of prisoners known as the Runners are here. The work of these people was hard, physically exhausting, psychologically not to be endured by the occasional prisoner. The work continues without a break for several hours, several days, months, even years. and at last without a breakthrough, 9.5 million burned people. However, those who loaded them into the gas weren't bad people. They were patriots whose families were also burned. No, they weren't bad people. They were simply mentally corrected to the obedience of the one world order. All of us walk around naked. The delousing is finally over, and our striped suits are back from the tanks of Cyrix DX Solution, an efficient killer of lice in clothing and of men in gas chambers. But all the same, all of us walk around naked. The heat is unbearable. The camp has been sealed off tight. Not a single prisoner, not one solitary man can sneak through the gate. The runners have stopped working. All day, thousands of naked men shuffle up and down the roads, cluster around in squares, or lie against the walls and on top of the roofs. We've been sleeping on plain boards since our mattresses and blankets are still being disinfected. And from the rear blocks, we have a view of the train tunnels. There, too, the delousing is in full swing. 28,000 men have been stripped naked and driven out of their barracks. And now they swarm around the large yard between the blocks. This is a living hell. As I walk to the side of my building, I hear aimless cries of those who are injured and those who are about to give up the ghost. The heat rises. The hours are endless. We are without even our usual duties of the day. The road, the wide roads leading to the crematoria, are empty. For several days now, no new transports have come in. I've not seen a child in months since the United Nations collective party of Republicans and Democrats came and took them away. Part of the runners have been liquidated by the acid pools or sent to the toughest labor camp, one of the very toughest in Texas. Evil is all around us. But there exists in the camp a special brand of justice based on the spirit of envy. When the rich and mighty fall, their friends see to it that they fall to the very bottom. And the UN guards? They've amassed great fortunes in gold teeth and euro currency from Europe. And since I am on the topic of great wealth, the armed airline pilots and stewardesses managed to rob us of most of our belongings as we got off the plane at the airport. I remember when arming the pilots were an important issue, especially after the 9-1-1 attacks. Who would think that government agents would replace the pilots? Hell, who would have thought that the free airplane tickets given to us as a token for turning in our firearms would deliver us to the camps of damnation? And so here we are, packed like sardines in a tin can. You can hear the loudspeakers outside. Looks like Hillary Clinton is making another speech again. We heard she replaced the firefighters in the cities with terrorists. Every time someone calls 911, these guys show up and hose the people down with some kind of chemical. It is still a mystery. Something was said about non-compliance dealing with the housing code. Several of us are sitting on the top bunk, our legs dangling over the edge. We all still have pains and aches from the shackles that we were put in ever since they found a copy of the Constitution under one of the beds. It's dinner time. We slice the neat loaves of crisp, crunchy, 40-day-old bread. It's a bit coarse to the taste, the kind that leaves a taste in your mouth for days. Sent all the way from Warsaw. Only a week ago, my mother held this white loaf in her hands. Dear Lord, we unwrap the bacon, the onion. We open a can of government milk. James, the fat Australian, dreams aloud of the Coca-Cola brought by the transports from Dallas. Sweat streams down his forehead.
Listen, next time we go up on the loading ramp, I'll bring you a real Coca-Cola. Have you seen it unloaded on the docks before?
No, but you'll never be able to smuggle it through the gate, so stop teasing. Why not try and organize some shoes for me and the other prisoners instead, you know? The perforated kind? With a double sole? And what about that shirt you promised me long ago?
Hey, patience, patience, mate. When the new transports come, I'll bring you all you want. We'll be going on the ramp again soon.
And what if there aren't any more cremo transports, I said hopefully. Can't you see how much easier life is becoming around here? No limit on packages. No more beatings. You even write letters to other inmates in distant camps. One hears all kind of talk, and damn it, they'll run out of people.
Hey, stop talking nonsense!
James' serious fat face moves rhythmically, his mouth full of bread. We've been talking friends. We've been friends for a long time, but you know, I don't even know his last name.
Stop talking bullshit, he repeats,
swallowing with effort.
They can't run out of people who is starved to death in this blasted camp. All of us live on what they bring. You know, Silent Green.
Has it ever occurred to you, James, that maybe we'd be better off going home to the Lord?
Sure. You and your friends and 10 other friends of yours. Some of you believers get packages, but what about us, the non-believers, and the rest of your God knows what? What if we had no food, no organization from the transports? You think you'd be eating those packages of yours in peace? We wouldn't let you. I know you believe in Christ and all that, but you guys need to be careful about sharing your faith around here. The Garden Tower 6 shot a man yesterday for praying too loud. And they took all the food away from Block 8 because they heard someone say, praise God. You would starve to death like the geeks. And around here, whoever has the grub's got the power. Anyway, you have enough. We have enough. So why argue religion?
Right. Why argue? They have enough. I had enough. We eat together and we sleep on the same bunks. James saws the bread. He makes a rice salad. Tastes good with the commissary oil. Below us, naked, sweat-drenched people crowd the narrow barracks aisles or lie packed in eights and tens in the lower bunks. Their nude, withered bodies stink of sweat and excrement. Their cheeks are hollow. Directly beneath me in the bottom bunk lies a pastor of a large church that was burned down in Texas. He's covered his head with a piece of rag torn off a blanket and reads from a prayer book. You know, there's a shortage of this type of literature at the camp, and he's wailing loudly, monotonously. Can't someone shut him up? He's been raving as if he'd caught God himself by the feet. I don't feel like moving. Let him rave. They'll take him to the oven that much sooner. Religion is the opium of the people, Lagarde loudly proclaims. If they didn't believe in God and eternal life, they'd have done away with the crematoria long ago. Why haven't you done it then? Hell, America left God a long time ago. The question, of course, is rhetorical. Lagarde ignores it. And just as we finish our snack, there's a sudden commotion at the door. The runners scurry in fright to the safety of their bunks. A messenger runs into the block elder's shack. The elder, his face solemn, steps out at once. There's a transport coming. Great God, yells James, jumping off the bunk. He swallows the rest of his rice, snatches his coat, and screams, God won! At the men below. And in a flash is at the door. We can hear a scramble in the other bunks. The laborers are leaving for the ramp. James, the shoes, I call after him. I will try, he shouts back, already outside. I proceed to put away the food. I tie a piece of rope around the suitcase where the potatoes and the oranges from my father's garden in Texas mingle with crackers and bacon from Los Angeles. That's from my brother. I tie it all up, put on my trousers, slide off the bunk. James, I yell, pushing my way through the geeks. They step aside. At the door, I bump into Larry. What the hell's going on? Want to come up with us on the ramp? Well, sure, why not? Come along, then. Grab your coat. We're short a few men. I've already told the guards. And he shoves me out the barracks door. We line up. Someone has marked down our numbers. Someone up ahead yells, march, march! And now we are running towards the gate, accompanied by the shouts of a multilingual throng that is already being pushed back to the barracks. Not everybody's lucky enough to be going on the ramp. We've almost reached the gate. Erect arms stretch stiffly along our hips. We march past the gate briskly, almost gracefully. A sleepy UN man with a large pad in his hand checks us off, waving us ahead in groups of five. Clear, he calls after we've all passed. Move it, scumbags, comes a loud voice from out front. We march fast, almost at a run. There are guards all around, young men with automatics. We pass Camp Ela, and then some deserted barracks and a clump of unfamiliar green, rotting corpses lying in a ditch. We cross the circle of watchtowers, and after a short run, we burst onto the highway. We've arrived. Just a few more yards. There, surrounded by trees, is the ramp. An eerie little station, very much like a provincial railway stop with a large square frame, and it's paved with yellow gravel. Not far off, beside the road, squats a tiny wooden shed, uglier and even more flimsy than the ugliest and flimsiest railway shack. Farther along lie stacks of old rails, heaps of wooden beams, barracks parts, bricks, paving stones. This is where they load freight for Babylon, supplies for the construction of the camp, people for the gas chambers. United Nations trucks drive around, load up lumber, cement, people. A regular daily routine. You see, after George Bush's war, rebuilding the Tower of Babel was a first priority. And now the guards are being posted along the rails, across the beams, in the green shade of the ammunition boxes. to form a tight circle around the ramp. They wipe the sweat from their faces and sip out of their canteens. It's unbearably hot. The sun stands motionless at its zenith. Fall out! We sit down in the narrow streaks of shade along the stacked rails. The hungry geeks, several of whom have managed to come along, God only knows how, rummage underneath the rails. One of them finds some pieces of mildewed bread, another a few half-rotten sardines. They eat. You idiot, spits a young, tall guard with corn-colored hair. For Satan's sake, any minute you'll have so much food to stuff down your guts, you'll bust. He adjusts his gun, wipes his face with a handkerchief. Hey, you, fatso! His boot lightly touches James' shoulder. Want a drink?
Sure, but I haven't got much money, replies the Aussie. Aw, too bad. Come on, sir, isn't my word good enough anymore? Haven't we done business before? How much?
$10.
Sold.
We drink the water. Lukewarm, tasteless. It will be paid for by the people who have not yet arrived.
Now you be careful, says James, turning to me.
He tosses away the empty bottle. It strikes the rails and bursts into tiny fragments.
Don't take any money. They might be checking. Anyway, who the hell needs money? You've got enough to eat? Don't take suits either. They'll think you're planning to escape. Just get a shirt with a collar, and if you find something to drink, don't bother calling me. I knew how to shift for myself, but you watch your step or they'll let you have it.
Do they torture folks in here?
Naturally. You've got to have eyes in the back of your head.
Around us sit the runners, their jaws working greedily, like human insects. They munch on stale lumps of bread. They are restless, wondering what will happen next. The sight of the large beams and the stacks of rails have them worried. They dislike carrying heavy loads. In the meantime, the ramp has become increasingly alive with activity, increasingly noisy. The crews are being divided into those who will open and unload the arriving human transport cars and those who will be posted by the wooden steps. They receive instructions on how to proceed most efficiently. Motorcycles drive up, delivering UN officers. Glittering with brass, beefy men with highly polished jack boots and shiny, brutal faces. Some have brought their briefcases. Others hold thin, flexible whips. This, you see, gives them an air of arrogant military readiness and agility. They walk in and out of the commissary, for the miserable little shack by the road serves as their commissary, where in the summertime they drink mineral water, and where in winter they can warm up with a glass of whiskey. They greet each other in the state-approved way, raising an arm Roman fashion, and then shake hands cordially, exchanging warm smiles, discuss mail from home, their children, their families. Some stroll majestically on the ramp, the silver squares on their collars glitter. The gravel crunches under their boots. Their bamboo whip snaps impatiently. What I would give to have just one of those AR-15s in my hands about now. We lie against the rails in the narrow streaks of shade, breathe unevenly, occasionally exchange a few words, and gaze listlessly at the evil men in blue. What bastards they are! And these are the folks that take being a Republican seriously. Oh, they always correct anyone that tries to leave out the Democratic Party in their conversations, but for now they proudly boast that the two parties became one. But then you see that happened years ago. I begin to daydream about the events that occurred prior to the massive assault against the American Republic. The people did nothing when our president and the media called us a democracy. The people did nothing when they passed the so-called hate speech legislation and that had nothing to do with terrorism. The people did nothing when the president declared the Constitution null and void. The people did nothing when his most high fascist created Homeland Security. The people did nothing when the ICC court was created. The people did nothing when martial law was enacted. They did nothing when the United Nations outlawed vitamins and gardens. The people did nothing when all of the illegals from Mexico took over California. The people did nothing, nothing, nothing! What? The transport is coming, someone says. We spring to our feet. All eyes turn in one direction. And around the bend, one after another, the human transport cars begin to roll in. The train backs into the station. A conductor leans out, waves his hand, blows a whistle. The locomotive whistles back with a shrieking noise. It puffs. The train rolls slowly alongside the ramp. In the tiny barred windows appear pale, wilted, exhausted, and abused human faces, terror-stricken women with tangled hair, unshaven men. And they gaze at the station in silence. And then, suddenly, there's a stir inside the cars and pounding against the wooden boards. Water! Air! Weary, desperate human cries. The sound would terrorize any soul that was within earshot. Heads push through the windows. Mouths gasp frantically for air. They draw a few breaths and then disappear. Others come in their place and then also disappear. And the cries and moans grow louder and louder with each passing minute. A man in a blue UN uniform covered with more glitter than any of the others jerks his head impatiently. His lips twist in annoyance. He inhales deeply. And when, with a rapid gesture, throws his cigarette away and signals to the guard removes the automatic from his shoulder, aims, and sends a series of hellfire along the train. All is quiet now. Meanwhile, the UN trucks have arrived. Steps are being drawn up. The runners stand ready at their posts by the train doors. The UN officer with a briefcase raises his hand. Whoever takes the gold or anything at all besides food will be shot for stealing UN property. Understand? Yes, sir, we answer eagerly. Begin unloading. The bolts crack. The doors fall open. A wave of fresh air rushes inside the train. People inhumanly cram, their twisted faces of horror buried under heaps of luggage. Suitcases, trunks, packages, crates, bundles of every description, everything that had been in their past and was meant to start their future. Monstrously squeezed together, they have fainted from heat. Suffocated, some were crushed to death on top of one another, and now they push towards the open doors, breathing like fish cast out on the deck. One guard yells, Achtung! Parents, the Homeland Security summer camp for kinder is finally here. Attention, out, and take your luggage with you, take out everything. Pile all your stuff near the exits, yes, your coats too. It is summer, march to the left, verstehen? Sir, what is going to happen to us? They jump from the train onto the gravel, anxious, worn out. One of them curses at the guard and picks up a rock. The guard opens fire and kills the man. Sir, please don't shoot us. We're not with this man. We only want to know what is to become of us. You will be treated fairly if you obey the orders. If you show politically correct behavior in the coming months, then you may return to your homes. It, you see, is the camp law. People going to their death must be deceived to the very end. This is only the only permissible form of charity. The heat is tremendous. The sun hangs directly over our heads. The white, hot sky quivers. The air vibrates. And an occasional breeze. And it feels like a sizzling blast from a furnace. Our lips are parched. The mouth fills with a salty taste of blood. The body is weak and heavy from lying in the sun. Water. Water. A huge multicolored wave of people loaded down with luggage pours from the train like a blind, mad river trying to find a new bed. But before they have a chance to recover, before they can draw a breath of fresh air and look at the sky, bundles are snatched from their hands, coats ripped off their backs, their purses and umbrellas taken away. But please, sir, it's for the sun. I cannot shut up! One of us barks through clenched teeth. There is a UN guard standing behind your back. This way, citizens. Try not to throw your things around, please. Some show goodwill. United Nations is your god, he says boldly, his restless hands playing with the slender whip. Yes, sir, they answer as they pass. And now they walk alongside the train somewhat more cautiously. A woman reaches down quickly to pick up her handbag. The whip flies. The woman screams, stumbles, and falls under the feet of the surging crowd. And behind her, her frail, thin husband cries in a thin little voice, Marianne, a very small man with tangled gray curls. The heaps grow. Suitcases, bundles, blankets, coats, handbags that open as they fall, spilling coins, gold, watches, mountains of bread pile up at the exits, masses of meat, sausages, sugar spills on the gravel, UN trucks loaded with people start up with a deafening roar and drive off amidst the wailing and screaming of the women separated from their husbands and the stupefied silence of the men left behind. They, you see, are the ones who had been ordered to step to the right, the healthy and the young who will go to the camp. In the end, they too will not escape death. But first, they must work. One guard laughing said, "Welcome to the USSA, the United Socialist Seizure of Assets. Your constitution has been damped. The New World Order is here. Welcome this harlot with open arms. Lay in bed with her. Give her the power of this harlot's belly in her wishes. Birthing pangs, earthquakes, war, screams of infidelity, a green aura with stench that thus approaches your nostrils. Breathe in, all ye bastards of children forsaken by your families, globalized mistakes made in the past. Death smells plenty of your rotten bones for the sake of Nimrod's golden achievement." The trucks leave and return, without interruption. As on a monstrous conveyor belt, a Red Cross van drives back and forth incessantly. It transports the gas that will kill the people. The enormous cross on the hood, red as blood, seems to dissolve in the sun. The runners at the trucks cannot stop for a single moment, even to catch their breath. They shove the people up the steps, pack them in tightly. 60 per truck, more or less. Nearby stands a young, clean-shaven gentleman, a UN officer with a notebook in his hand. For each departing truck, he enters a mark. 16 gone means 1,000 people, more or less. The gentleman is calm, precise. You see, no truck can leave without a signal for him or a mark in his notebook. The marks swell into the thousands into whole transports, which afterwards we shall simply call from Texas, from Montana, from Arizona. This one will be called California, Mexico. The new prisoners from California, Mexico will receive serial numbers 121 to 8,000, of course. Though afterwards we shall simply say 526 to 0 for short. "Brand them! I want to see the mark on every one of their foreheads in this case." The transports swell into the weeks, the months, the years. And when the takeover is done, they will count up the marks in their notebooks. All 19.5 million of them. The bloodiest battle ever. The greatest victory of the strong. United Nations. Ein Reich. Ein Volk. Ein Führer. And 4 crematoria. Our story will conclude after we come back. It's music from Steve Voss.
Our colonial fathers showed us the way. Let the battle for freedom that guides us today. On and true Americans who answer the call, protect and defend. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty, so I'll stand right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Every time I hear children say the pledge of allegiance, I'm reminded there's no price high for freedom. To keep America first, last and forever. We must stand our ground, fighting together. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty, so I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet live on my knees. I'm a patriot. Color me red, white, and blue. Fellow patriots, America's counting on you. And I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty. So I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's no point to life without liberty. So I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet. Live on my
emptied now. But this particular train smells like gas. Are they gassing some before they even get here? A thin, pockmarked UN man peers inside, shakes his head in disgust, and motions to our group, pointing his finger at the door. Clean it up! We climb inside. In the corners, amid human excrement and abandoned wristwatches, lie squashed, trampled infants, naked little monsters with enormous heads and bloated bellies. We carry them out like chickens, holding several in each hand. My God, I thought they wanted the children. Shh, whispers James. Don't take them to the trucks. Pass them out of the woman, says the UN man, lighting a cigarette. Cigarette lighter isn't working properly. He examines it carefully. Take them for God's sake. I wither in terror as the women run from me in horror, covering their eyes. The name of God sounds strangely pointless, since the women and the infants will go on the trucks. Every one of them, with no exception. We all know what this means, and we look at each other with hate and horror. What? You don't want to take them? Asks the pockmarked UN man with a note of surprise and reproach in his eyes, and reaches for his revolver. You mustn't shoot. I'll carry them. A tall, gray-haired woman takes the little corpses out of my hands and for an instant gazes straight into my eyes. God, I wish I were dead, I thought to myself. My poor boy, she whispers and smiles at me. And then she walks away, staggering along the path. I lean against the side of the train. I'm terribly tired. Someone pulls at my shirt. To the rails, come on! I look up, but the face swims before my eyes. It dissolves, huge, transparent. Melts into the motionless trees and the sea of people and thoughts of death. I blink rapidly. James? Listen, James, are we good people?
Hey, that's stupid. Why do you ask?
You see, my friend, you see. I don't know why, but I'm furious, simply furious with these people. Furious because I must be here because of them. They did nothing to prevent all of this when it came to voting time. I feel no pity. I'm not sorry they're going to the gas chamber. Damn them all! I could beat them with my fists. It must be pathological. I just cannot understand.
It's the medication they gave you, mate.
What?
Oh, never mind.
On the contrary, It's natural, predictable, calculated. The ramp exhausts you. You rebel. The easiest way to relieve your hate is to turn against someone weaker. Why, I'd even call it healthy. It's simple logic, you see. He props himself up comfortably against the heap of rails.
Look at them geeks. They knew how to make the best of it. They stop their bellies with anything they can find. One of them has just devoured a jar full of pickles. Pigs. Tomorrow half of them will die of the shit. Pigs, you've been hungry. Pigs, I repeat furiously. I close my eyes. The air is filled with ghastly cries.
The earth trembles beneath me. I can feel sticky moisture on my eyelids. My throat is completely dry. I'm going to kill the first UN guard I see, I say to myself. The morbid procession streams on and on. Trucks growl like mad dogs. I shut my eyes tight, but I can still see corpses dragged from the train, trampled infants, cripples piled on top of the dead, wave after wave, freight cars roll in, the heaps of clothing. The suitcases, the bundles grow, people climb out, look at the sun, take a few breaths, beg for water, get into the UN trucks, and drive away. And again, freight cars roll in, again, more people. The scene's all becoming confused in my mind. I'm not sure if all this is actually happening, or if I'm just dreaming. Oh God, let this be a dream. There's a humming inside my head. I feel that I must vomit. James tugs at my arm.
Don't sleep, mate, we're off to load up all the loot.
All the clouds are gone. In the distance, the last few UN trucks roll along the road in clouds of dust. The train has left. Several UN officers promenade up and down the ramp. The silver glitters on their collars. Their boots shine. Their red, beefy faces shine. And among them there's a woman. Only now I realize she's been here all along. Withered, flat-chested, bony, her thin, cruddy, blonde hair pulled back and tied in a Nordic knot. Her hands are in the pockets of her wide skirt, and with a rat-like resolute smile glued on her thin lips, she sniffs around the corners of the ramp. My God, it's Hillary! She detests feminine beauty with the hatred of a woman who is herself repulsive and knows it. Yes, I've seen her many times before, and I know her well. She's the bitch that promoted all this terror, along with a vice president that planned 911. She was a prominent speaker for the United Nations. She's come to look over the new crop of women for some of them. Instead of going on the trucks, we'll go on foot to the death camp. There, our boys, the barbers from Babylon, will shave their heads and we'll have a good laugh at their outside world modesty. We proceed to load the loot. We lift huge trunks, heave them onto the trucks. There they're arranged in stacks, oh, packed tightly. Occasionally somebody slashes one open with a knife, for pleasure, or maybe in search of whiskey or perfume. One of the crates falls open. Suits, shirts, and Bibles drop out on the ground. I pick up a small, heavy package. I unwrap it. Gold, about two handfuls. Bracelets, rings, brooches, diamonds, coins. I'll take that, a UN man says calmly, holding up his briefcase already full of gold and colorful foreign currency. He locks the case, hands it to an officer, takes another, an empty one, stands by the next truck, waiting. The gold will go to Babylon. I begin throwing up. I can take no more of this. In between gasps, I give the guard the finger in hope that he will shoot me. Kill me, you global scumbag! Shut your mouth, growls the guard through clenched teeth, and walks away. And from under a pile of rags, he pulls out a canteen, unscrews the cork, takes a few deep swallows, and passes it to me. The strong whiskey burns the throat. My head swims. My legs are shaky. Again, I feel like throwing up. I go inside the train. I carry out dead infants. I unload more luggage. I touch corpses, but I cannot overcome the mounting, uncontrollable terror. I try to escape from the corpses, but they are everywhere, lined up on the gravel. On the cement edge of the ramp, inside the human transport cars, babies, hideous, naked women, men twisted by convulsions. I run off as far as I can go, but immediately a whip slashes across my back, and out of the corner of my eye I see a UN man swearing profusely. I stagger forward and run, lose myself in the runner group, and now at last I can once more rest against the stack of rails. The sun has leaned low over the horizon, illuminates the ramp with a reddish glow. The shadows of the trees have become elongated. Ghost-like in the silence that settles over nature at this time of the day, the human cries seem to rise all the way to the sky. The day turns to night. I never thought the night would ever feel this thick. This living horror has rotted my soul beyond belief. How could so many people buy into a one-world government system? Why did so many gun organizations in the past ignore the warnings from others? I remember that many folks tried to warn them, but they were told that the subject was not gun-related. The only thing I was concerned about was my beer, my ammo collection. Football game on Monday night. I know I was wrong now. Wish I could have organized more people to vote out socialism before it was too late. Oh, sure, wish I had my gun now. I could bust up some jackbooted thugs here for sure. The lights on the ramp flicker with a spectral glow. the wave of people, feverish, agitated, stupefied people. They flow on and on and on endlessly. They think that now they will have to face a new life in a camp. And they prepare themselves emotionally for the hard struggle ahead. They do not know that in just a few minutes they will die. That the gold, the money, the diamonds, which they have so prudently hidden in their clothing and on their bodies, are now useless to them. Experienced professionals will probe into every recess of their flesh, will pull the gold from under the tongue and the diamonds from the uterus and the colon. They'll rip out gold teeth in tightly sealed crates. They will ship them to Babylon. Only from this distance does one have a full view of the inferno on the teeming ramp. I see a pair of human beings who have fallen to the ground, locked in a last desperate embrace. The man has dug his fingers into the woman's flesh and has caught her clothing with his teeth. She screams hysterically, swears, cries, until at last a large boot comes down upon her throat and she is silent. They're pulled apart and dragged like cattle to the truck. I see four Hispanic men lugging a corpse, a huge, swollen female corpse, cursing, dripping wet from the strain. They kick out of their way some stray children who've been running all over the ramp, howling like dogs. The men pick them up by the collars, heads, arms, and toss them inside the trucks on top of the heaps. The four men have trouble lifting the fat corpse onto the car. They call others for help, and all together they hoist up the big mound of meat. Big, swollen, puffed-up corpses are being collected from all over the ramp, and on top of them are piled the invalids, the smothered, the sick, the unconscious. The heap seethes. It howls and groans. The driver begins the motor, starts the motor, and the truck begins to roll. It's almost over now. The dead are being cleared off the ramp and piled into the last truck. The stars of twilight's last gleaming are already beginning to pale as we walk back to the camp. The sky grows translucent and opens high above our heads. This once great nation has taken a deadly turn in history. The words of infamy stall the air with a sickening warning. The United States of America has no viable patriotic leadership and consequently has become the USSA, or United Socialist States of America, a police state in progress and in waiting. For us, we the people, when you figure this out, it'll be too late. Dorothy Ann Cease. We'll be back in a moment.
You can hear it in the distance. You can feel it in the air. You can tell the time is coming. You can sense it everywhere. You can see it in the faces. All around you see the signs. America is changing. Freedom's on the line. Will you be
that which we have just shared with you for this last 45, 46 odd minutes is a scene of things to come if we, the American people, do not wake up and realize that, in fact, it is our destiny to face that which we have just described to you. But, of course, it's not just America. It's so many other nations around the world. In 1 month from the day of this recording, we, in fact, will be going to the polls, Americans all over this country. And, my friends, I fear the outcome, no matter which of the two candidates is selected to be the next president of the United States of America. That which we have shared with you was written recently by my associate editor from the Federal Observer, Louis Turner, a brilliant writer. What a scary read, as it should be. One of our readers, Stephen Churchill, states that, "I hope and pray that the rest of America will wake up." Yeah, right. Fat friggin' chance. "I hope when the time comes to stand up and be counted that I and those who stand with me shall not die in vain. As for my guns, I think I'll hold on to them till such time as I will need them. History will always repeat." I'll be back. Oh, yeah, baby, this music. It's grinding, and it serves a purpose.
You can't even sink or swim. We've got too many holes in the ozone. Too much sunshine gets in. Well, I'm too many people not thinking. Nobody but themselves. We don't care to move on. We're living a living hell.
The name of this program today, Behold Your Destiny. I hope and truly pray, not for my benefit, but for the benefit of we the people of these United States of America, that you will take advantage of this program. It's been a long time since I've done a program of this type. I think back to January of 2001 with our program Edge of Darkness, wherein we shared with you a letter from the New World Order that basically said you have no chance There's nothing you can do to fight us. And I maintain that there is much we can do to fight them, but the average American does and says nothing. They've had their chances. Legislation is before our Congress as we broadcast this program today, and most of you sit home with your thumbs up your assets and do nothing because you don't believe there's a thing you can do. And I maintain you're wrong. You cannot any longer sit by waiting for a radio broadcaster to do the damn job for you. Because there's not a one of us out here broadcasting on mainstream or the alternative media that should be put up on a pedestal. None of us are gods. Although some of them, I think, are quite satanic. And in the next couple of weeks, we're going to divulge something I've been holding on to for a long time, and the time has come to let the cat out of the bag. You want to know about satanic broadcasters? Stick around, because it's getting ready to explode the airwaves. But until such time, in the words of Peter Blood, now before we get to that, I want you to order a copy of today's program, Behold Your Destiny. I want you to share it with as many people as you possibly can. You can acquire a copy by calling us at 623-327-1778. That's 623-327-1778. You can get this on either compact disc or audio cassette. Behold Your Destiny. In the words of Peter Blood, after he'd read this entire dissertation, as is been written by Louis Turner, Peter says, game, set, match. Might as well pack a few things. Most of you are going there. Face it. The game's over. We did not play this deadly game well. We were too lazy to read the rules and learn of the penalties. Might be a way out, but most haven't got the heart for it. Wake up, America! Behold your destiny! Without apology, I am Jeffrey Benner.
Become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard on corners in town. There's a cancer called crime in our cities and an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Put an end to the gangs and the drugs and the streets and the fact that the bad guys most always go free. That is wrong. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and take all our money and send it abroad. We must take America back. We need prayer in the schools and more things made in USA. It's the least we can do for the red, white, and blue. We must take America back. It's a hell here on earth in some city schoolyards, when bullets and birth control outnumber books, something's wrong. There's a hunger for good news and heroes, but good news is no news, so all of the heroes are gone. We must take America back, put an end to the gangs and the drugs and the streets and the fact that the bad guys most always go free. That is wrong. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, and take all our money and send it abroad.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.